So this text called Meditation and Life, which we are today, we're going to be doing the 11th chapter. So having talked about what this world is, the external world and the internal world, the object and the subject, and talked about the need for spiritual growth. And then last week we talked about the gross body, the visible body that is visible to us. As we know in this BMI chart, the gross body or the visible body that we can see, with that we become perceiver of objects. With the mind, we feel the emotions. And with the intellect, we think the thoughts. And the vasanas are my tendencies or habits which make me do good or bad actions, good depending on good or bad tendencies. And Om represents God's presence within us, which is common to everybody. So having talked about the gross body, today the teacher will talk about the subtle body, the mind and the intellect. And we have that on the board, the mind and the intellect. But the subtle body, or what we call as the antahkarana or the inner equipment, actually consists of four components. So the mind and the intellect is the one that we are aware of. But there are four components, so I'll talk briefly about each one, which constitute the subtle body. So the mind is the seat of emotions. So with the mind, I become the feeler of emotions. So whenever I have emotions of love or joy or sorrow or hatred or anger, we are functioning at the level of the mind, which is the emotional component. The mind is also said to be the samshayatmak vritti, which means the non-decisive mind. So like, I have a choice, should I, today should I watch the basketball game or should I go to the meditation class, the NBA finals are. So at that hour could be anything else. I get up in the morning, I have decided to do some yoga and meditation, but it's very cold and I slept late and I'm tired. So should I turn off the alarm and go back to sleep? So the mind is the non-decisive, which is not sure what to do. So that is called the sanshayatmak. And the intellect is called the nishchayatmak vritti, or the decisive part of my inner personality, which when the intellect has the right ideas. See, the intellect is the one that gets the information. And where do we get the information? We get information from all over. We get information from our parents, who our mother is our first teacher. And then we get it from school, from college. We get it from the media. We get it from the newspapers, internet. We get it from the scriptures, from the gurus, from the prophets. So the intellect that has the right knowledge from the scriptures, and that is very, very important. Because the source, we have so many sources. They say, I read it on the internet. But we don't know who put it on the internet. It may be very authoritative or maybe somebody who is totally wrong. And when you, the same subject, when you put in there, you get 12 or 14 different articles, And so which one is the one I should use? And so that's why they say go to the scriptures. And the scripture should be properly interpreted by a teacher who knows what the scriptures mean. So the teachers should interpret the scriptures not only literally, but also what they indicate. What is the knowledge indicated in the scriptures? So when the intellect has the right knowledge, then it becomes the decisive factor or the nishchayatmak vritti. So the intellect is the decisive factor which decides what the mind should do and what the individual should do. And as we have talked before, we'll talk again later how the mind and the intellect need to be connected. So the mind is the emotional factor, the undecisive. Intellect is the decisive, and the intellect decides what I should do. And then chitta is a Sanskrit word. The reason I put the Sanskrit word, because it has two distinct meanings. One meaning, as which is in our text that we are following, which Swamiji gives, he talks about intellect being the chitta being the illumining factor, which illumines for me the functions of the mind and the intellect. First of all, of course, there is the consciousness, but the chitta is the one that through the consciousness functions through that and illumines my mind and intellect, my thoughts and emotions. And Chitta also, in other translations, in Patanjali Yoga and other yogas, Chitta means memory. So Chitta is the sum total of all my memories that I have accumulated from childhood. And the fourth one is the ego. And the ego, most of us are quite familiar with, it is the I and mine, which we call here the perceiver, feeler and thinker. The little I, as you may put it. The little I means this limited individual that I am. My name is Anil or Diana, and this is, I'm a male or female, and I'm an Indian or an American, or I'm a young or old, I'm short or tall. And we leave our, and then that ego accounts for I-ness and minus. I and mine. So I am this body, and so this is my, and this is, you know, I belong to this community, this race, this nationality. And then we limit ourselves based on our body identification. Or I say, I'm a very emotional person, I'm a very loving person, and why does my spouse not respond? Or why doesn't the world respond? Or intellectually, I'm very smart, I'm very intelligent, the other guy, I don't. So, you know, so that is, we are just remain focused with that. I mean, that is necessary to function in the world, but then that limits us to just who I am. And this is a very limited concept of who I am. And so then the whole world revolves around I and mine. So this is my house, my car, my child. And then we relate so much. If my child is doing well, I'm doing well. If my child is not doing well, I'm a failure. So that is all the ego that is functioning. Each one of us is individuals. And so the ego is the individuality. So we're not saying that one should not have one's individuality, should not have pride in one's accomplishment. But that pride should not turn to arrogance, should not turn to looking down on others, should not turn to selfishness. So these are the four aspects. So the mind, the intellect, the memory, and the ego. And the idea is that all four aspects of this personality should be directed upwards. What is upwards? Upwards is the Lord. And the Lord is not only up above, but up within us also. It is the higher. So that's why Krishna says in the Gita, I have my lower nature and the higher nature. So the lower nature is this world, BMI, PFT, OET. That is all the lower nature, and the higher nature is Om. And you can call it Jesus, you can call it Krishna, you can call it Buddha. So all my faculties should be directed upwards. That means my mind should be thinking lovingly about God at all times, you know, have a relationship of love. God should not be somebody who is feared, somebody who is a judge, who's, you know, sitting there and waiting to punish us, waiting for the first mistake so he can, you know, throw his lightning bolt. No, he's not. He's a very loving personality. He loves us. And it's actually not even he, you know, even though we traditionally use he, we in Sanskrit, they talk about God as that, you know, it is the neuter gender. In Sanskrit, they have masculine, feminine and neuter. So God is neuter means it is beyond male or female, beyond sex, beyond color, beyond nationality, beyond religion. It is that one consciousness that takes different forms. But this consciousness is hard to love. You say he's all pervading. He has no qualities, no color. So then that's why we have been given these forms. That same consciousness takes different forms. Takes the form of Jesus. You can love, relate very well to Jesus, read his stories and what he did and how he was loving and forgiving. Or you can read the stories of Krishna or Shiva or Buddha. Or so reading these stories and develops an attitude of love. And God has to be loved. So with the mind, I love. With the intellect, I should know. So reading good books, watching good programs on TV, you know, there could be reading good articles on the internet. But one has to be very selective. As I said, the teacher also has to have the right knowledge. Otherwise, we find a lot of people misguide and give wrong information. So it should not, this knowledge should not make us fanatic, but should make us all inclusive. So the intellect, and then the memory or the chitta should be filled with those memories, good thoughts, good memories. So read stories about saints. I always tell stories about saints are so inspiring. Not only Western saints, but Indian saints, Buddhist saints. The more you read the stories, the more you realize how much love they had for God, how much affection, how they related to God, and how we can also model our life, just as, you know, a person wanting to be a good basketball player will read stories about Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Kobe. A person wanting to be a mountain climber will read stories about Hillary, you know, Edmund Hillary, Tenzing, and all those great mountaineers. So similarly, for a spiritual seeker, we must read stories of saints and fill our memory with those thoughts, with those emotions. And then the ego should be reduced. That means I and mine should be reduced. Whatever I have is given to me by the Lord. I should use that in service of mankind. So reduce I and mine. And to the extent you are able to do some charity, help others, even if you cannot do financial, maybe spend time, go visit people, you know, who are sick, or somebody who is in a nursing home whose children haven't visited. So all my four, and slowly, slowly, this attitude of I and mine, and any accomplishment, if it's a positive success, thank you, God, for what you have done. It is your power that made me work. God is like the electricity. Without electricity, these bulbs would be useless. So without God's presence, all my faculties are useless. So whatever I do is your accomplishment. Direct that to him and direct the success to him, especially when you get praise. Krishna Arpanamastu, I dedicate it to God. So direct all your faculties upwards. And the higher should control the lower. As we said, like we have so many examples. Like there was a story once I read this. There was a burning building and the child accidentally got left behind. And the mother ran back even though the building was on fire. They tried to stop her. She went, she found the child was crying, and she went to the balcony and there were people who were ready to hold, and she threw the child and they caught him, but in that process she, you know, got burned and, you know, didn't survive. So why? Because her emotions took over and her own bodily comforts. She was ready to give up even her own life to save somebody she loved. So the higher should control the lower. Or intellectually it's the same thing. When you have a particular goal, say a person wants to be, you know, a great scientist. So what does he or she do? Spend hours in the laboratory, you know, sometimes even on weekends. Why? Because I have to discover, I have to solve this problem. You know, it has been plaguing, bothering me, and has been bothering everybody. You know, so many people wanted to. And so in such a person, when he's on this intellectual quest, then for him, even family is not important. Maybe he doesn't have time sometimes for days, you know, may hardly see his family, even his physical comfort, whether he has eaten or not, whether he has, you know, all his parties and other things, everything he gives up. So the higher should control the lower. But what is very important is that the mind and the intellect, which are the two main faculties of the subtle body, should work together, and they are called as the two wings of a bird. So this is a bird. If it can only fly with two wings, if she only has one wing and she's fluttering, she's going to go round and round. Suppose one wing is hurt or broken. So similarly in us, we find that some people are very emotional and very loving, and that's good. If that is your personality, you want to love God, develop the emotional aspect, that is good. But at the same time, you need to have the right knowledge. You may be more emotional, or somebody else may be more intellectual. And he said, I like to read the scriptures. I want to understand who is God. That's very good. But at the same time, you need to have love. Unless you have both love for God and the right knowledge, your progress will be, you'll be going round and round in circles. So the two of them together, the love and knowledge, the intellect and the mind, when they together guide the body, then such a person is said to be going in the right direction. And the mind and intellect should reduce our attachments, because attachments becomes a big obstacle in my spiritual journey, because I'm so attached to things and beings that I cannot. So they say, give up your attachment to the lower and attached to the higher, to God. So this reminds me of a little story. So this businessman goes to this meditation teacher and says, I want to learn how to meditate. Okay, sit erect, Close your eyes, relax your body, take three long deep breaths, and slowly leave your cell phone. Because even there he's holding. So that is called attachment. You know, where all the time the things are there. And that's why they say when you meditate, at that time you should have nothing. You know, I'm not a man or a woman. I'm not a businessman. I'm not a mother. I'm not a father. Nothing belongs to me. I'm a seeker of truth. And right effort is very important. Physical effort can only come with the right mental attitude, the right mental effort. So this reminds me of another story. So this student goes to the teacher, says, "Teacher, if I diligently, very sincerely meditate and practice spirituality, how long will it take me to attain enlightenment?" So teacher says, 10 years. He was optimistic, but he said 10 years. Student says, "How about if I put a lot of effort, I work very hard and I put all my mind and everything on it, how long will it take me?" Teacher says, 20 years. Because, you know, because you have to put the right effort. You know, what time, we also think sometimes meditation is like a fight. It's a struggle with my mind. I have to fight with my mind and control it and not let it move. And that becomes, for all seekers, especially in the early stages, it's very important to relax and put the right effort. And that is in anything. In anything, if you are tense, whether you're doing yoga, whether when you're playing tennis, you know, you're a tennis player, you know that if you are very tense and hold the racket very tight, the ball is not going to, you have to relax and gently, you know, go into the stroke. Of course, put your effort. So similarly, the mind and intellect has to be relaxed and gently and softly. The mind has to be gently guided in the right direction, not forced, not, you know, fought with. So attachment has to be reduced and right effort has to be given. Then there are four very important steps for all spiritual seekers, which are at the mental level. So what they say that at the end of the day, every day in the evening, take out a little bit of time before you go to bed and do four things: introspect, detect, negate, and substitute. So introspect means look back and say, okay, what did I do today? How was my day? How was my actions, but more important, how were my thoughts? Was I having positive thoughts? Was I negative? Was I angry? Was I depressed? Did I fight with somebody? So the thoughts and the actions have to be analyzed, and you can systematically go through, and after a while, it'll become easier. In the beginning, it may be difficult. Then the second step is to detect. Now, what is to detect? Detect all my negative actions and my negative tendencies, whatever I did. In the beginning, you know, I won't find any. It'll be like, it's the story of a saint. You know, oh, I was so good. I did so good. I was such a nice. But then slowly, as you go deeper and deeper, you will find subtle things. There, you know, somebody cut me off and I, you know, got angry. Or somebody did this and I talked back and said what I shouldn't have. Or even in my mind, I was so angry. So detect and then negate. So whenever you find that I have done anything negative, whether it's physical, negative, wrong actions, wrong speech, wrong emotions, or wrong ideas, then negate them. So what will happen? Slowly my mind, I will be clearing all this negative. It's like the garbage, you know, it's like you've cleared out all the dirt. And as you clear out the dirt, then there's empty space. And as they say, nature abhors a vacuum. If you don't fill this mind with positive, substituting positive ideas, then what will happen is your mind, which has been cleared of some negative, but then it is empty. And so what will happen? All other wrong thoughts, wrong ideas, wrong concepts will come in. So actively substitute. So introspect, then detect where I went wrong, what I did wrong. Negate all my negative tendencies, my negative actions, my negative thoughts, my negative emotion. And as I clean out my mind, then fill it with positive thoughts, fill it with positive values, fill it with love, fill it with compassion, fill it with right ideas by reading the scriptures, by, you know, listening to good teachers and saints and all that. So that's what even Saint Francis says, you know, where there is hatred, let me bring love. Where there is anger, let me bring compassion, and so on. And the other point that is very important is, as the mind, so the world. We each look upon the world colored by our own tendencies. Now we have 10 people here, or 10 or 11. Everybody, we are all listening to the same thing, but we are all processing it differently. And then how we relate to it. And same way when we meet people in the world, like her world is different from his world, is different from my world. Each one of us has our own world, which we create based on our tendencies. So there's a very beautiful story. So there were these four people who went into a garden. There was an artist, a poet, a botanist, and just a young man who was not of any particular profession. So they all walked into this garden. They were friends. And so they saw a beautiful rose, red, fully bloomed. And the artist was so inspired. He took out his paper and started, you know, drawing the rose and coloring it. Made a very beautiful painting of the rose. And the poet composed a beautiful poem. Oh, this rose, how you have bloomed, and you know, all those things. And the botanist, what did he do? He took the rose and tore it apart. Why? Because he wants to see where's the stamen and the pistil and the petals and all. And the fourth man started crying. So they said, why are you crying? He says, you know, 3 years ago, I had gone to my beloved's house and taken a dozen such red roses. And I gave it to her and she threw them at me and said, get out. I never want to see you again. And it reminds me of that day and I start crying. So now the same rose, you know, they have all four have different reactions based on their preconditioning. One is crying and one is painting, one is singing poetry and one is destroying it. So the point is that as our mind is, so is the world. And each one of us are the products of not only this life, but we are the products of multiple lifetimes. So we are all conditioned by our vasanas. But it does not mean that we are helpless slaves. People think that vasana is something that I was born with and I can do nothing about, like an alcoholic says, you know, my father was an alcoholic, my grandfather was an alcoholic, there was alcohol in my house, I can do nothing. No, you and I, we built our vasanas by our past actions. And so if we have built these vasanas, we can also undo them. So we are maybe the product of our vasanas, but we can change our life. And that is the difference between an animal and a human being. The animal is conditioned to do certain things. A lion is conditioned to attack a deer, a dog or a cat. They have no discrimination or intellect, but you and I have the intellect. So we can choose how we look at the world, how we relate to the world. And the same situation that of the negative one of that rose can be made positive. So that is how, so as the mind, so the world. So if we make our mind positive, the world will become positive. If we make our mind negative, the world will become negative. And the other point is that all three are actually connected, the body, mind, and intellect, even though we study them separately. The body is the perceiver, the mind is the feeler, the intellect is the thinker. But they are all connected. Like, say, physically, I'm exhausted and hurting and very sick, then automatically my emotions, you know, won't be that wonderful. My thinking also will be confused. Or if emotionally I'm very depressed, I'm going through a rough time, then physically also you feel tired and you don't want to do anything, you don't want to know anything, you don't want to read anything. And then intellectually also, suppose I have failed in something, I failed in an exam, or I didn't get a job, or my business collapsed, then also mentally I feel depressed, physically I feel exhausted. But what one has to do is that if there is a higher goal in life, if I have a higher goal, and the higher goal can be success for myself, not only for me to be successful, but with my success I can share it with others. So if I have the money, I can share. If I have knowledge, I can share knowledge. If I have love, I can share love. So when I have a higher goal, and ultimately the goal should be God realization, self-realization, knowing my higher nature. And when such is the goal, then no matter, even if there is a physical discomfort or emotionally there is some stress in my life or even some success or failure, but that's what the Gita also teaches us, that the wise individual goes beyond joy and sorrow, heat and cold, success and failure. And such a person is my devotee. God says that one who faces life without getting himself or herself disturbed, life will give us problems. Nobody's life is perfect. There will be heat and cold, joy and sorrow, success and failure, health and ill health, but praise and blame, honor and dishonor. So all those things will be there. But one whose goal is clear, self-knowledge, knowing God, then is able to encounter all life's problems and overcome them. So that is the essence of today's teaching. So the subtle body is a very, very important part of, in fact, meditation is done totally by the subtle body. Even though the physical body is sitting, but all the activity is, because as we sit, we find our mind, it becomes more and more active as we meditate. The mind starts running and starts thinking of all useless things, which I should not be thinking. So meditation is a mental activity, and that's why the subtle body is very important. So this is the essence. Any questions? Any comments?
I wish they would teach this in schools.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be great?
True, very true. Very
give
true.
People a different perspective rather than getting so worked up about so
yes,
many things.
Yes, absolutely.
I have a question.
Right.
As the mind, so the world. So what if the world specifically channels a lot of energy at one specific object and pumps extreme negativity at it? How does one handle it when they're very open, sensitive, caring, and then they can't function?
Because there's too much negative energy around. So yes, that will be there. So first of all, you have to be aware that there is this negative energy around me that is directing my attention in the wrong direction. So awareness is the first thing. And once you become aware and you realize that this negative energy is affecting me, so the person who meditates regularly, he or she is in tune with their mind. So when you are very sensitive or very, then you are more in tune with your mind, and you find your mind getting very disturbed. Why? Because all this negativity is coming. So the example I always give is that a person who has lived in Alaska her whole life, she loves the cold and loves that, the openness and the softness and, but she life loves that. And suddenly she gets a job in the Middle East, in an oil company. Oh, it's so hot, 115 degrees, and she has to work out in the heat. And she says, let me go back to my cool Alaska. I don't like this heat. I can't stand it. So similarly, a person who, when they have been regularly meditating, get used to this inner calmness. And the more you meditate, the more you come in touch with the inner self, the inner quietude. And once you have encountered that, then you find there is a situation which is disturbing my peace and giving me negative. So you immediately withdraw. No, I don't want that. I want to go back to my inner Alaska, to my inner peace, where there is calmness, there is quietude, there is coolness. And so irrespective of what the world is doing, if you are, first of all, you have to be aware that this is happening. Secondly, you have to retreat within and find that inner zone of peace and let the world be negative. The world always was negative, even at the time of Jesus, even at the time of Buddha or Shankaracharya. World will always have problems, but I should not let the world affect me. And that can only happen if I have control over my emotions, over my subtle body, over how my mind thinks, the emotions that arise. That does not mean you become cold or uncaring, but do not let the world. That's why they say it's like being in a boat. You are on the water. Don't let the water come into your boat. If it comes, the boat will sink. So I am in the world, but let not the world come into me.
So how do you disconnect from the hive mind when it's pumping, when that portal is there?
Right.
How, and you don't even really know what's happening, and then you push everything away out of protection.
Right.
So you don't want to go, you know.
I think detachment. You just detach and learn to, what they say, be a witness. Start watching your mind.
But then how do you engage with people?
No, you still deal with people. You deal with them, you know, so you can't stop engaging in the world. As long as I'm alive, I have to engage with people. I have to engage with my family, with my coworkers, with my friends, and even people who are not friendly to me. You engage with them, but to the best of your ability, be kind, compassionate, loving. And if somebody is very hateful or very negative, you try to avoid that person. If you cannot correct that person, then you just try to avoid and slowly reduce your contact with those situations. But inside, I should not let my mind be disturbed. So it's very important. The world, no matter what it's doing, but is my mind quiet? Is my mind peaceful? And through meditation, you can develop that ability to. And if you see the saints, how many problems they had, but you know, they, because they had firm faith in God and they were all the time with God, nobody could touch them. Physically you could, but you couldn't touch their inner self.
Also looking for some right association.
Yes.
Outside your absolute necessary field of activity.
Right.
You don't go out and engage with them all the time. Find the right group of people with whom you could discuss philosophy, meditative as like an association right now.
Mm-hmm.
Extended to similar
yes.
people rest of the week.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. That's good.
Even if their energy gets into you and takes you down, you can, you know, deal with it. And then when you leave the situation and go home or whatever, you know, call up spiritual people, read a spiritual book, exercise, you can bring yourself back up, even if that situation knocked you mm-hmm. down. You don't have to carry that situation with you all day long, you know, if it took you down. You have
right.
to raise yourself up, you know, and disconnect from it. And that's at least what I'm
no, that's right. good. Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
So the theta mind, when it's really open, it programs a lot of subconscious
mm-hmm.
reactions. And if it's a consistent streamline and there's no privacy anymore, the detoxing can get kind of tricky. So,
right.
How?
I think practice and detachment.
Meditation.
practice and detach. Detach from the mind and observe the mind. Make it a habit of letting your intellect watch your mind. So what is my mind doing right now? Mostly my mind is peaceful because, you know, we are in this peaceful atmosphere. And then we go out and now my mind is agitated, or now my mind is angry, or now my mind is calm. Or when I see somebody I love, my mind is very happy. So mind will be happy, unhappy, joy, sorrow, success, failure. All those things will go through the emotions, hatred, compassion, sorrow, joy, and all that. But in all of them, part of my mind should be watching and say, okay, now the mind is happy, good. Now the mind is not so happy. Okay, that's also good. That is a state of the mind. Let me not let the mind take over. Let the mind. The example they have given always of the river, I've talked about that many times. There is a fast flowing river, and if I'm in the river, like the Kern River is so strong, we heard so many people died. If I'm in the river will take me and sweep me, and maybe even, you know. But on the other hand, if I sit on the banks of the river, sit on those rocks, you know, on 178, and you watch the flow of the river, the river is so strong and the waves are. And you can enjoy the sounds and the flow of the river. So similarly, the people mostly get caught in the flow of the mind. The mind is nothing but a flow of thoughts, just as a river is a flow of water. So most of us get so caught in the flow of the mind. Oh, my mind is running. It's so stressed. I can't handle it. And that's when, you know, we go to a psychiatrist or take some Valium or Why? Because my mind is stressed. But if you can watch your mind and stand on the banks of the mind and say, okay, the mind is running. Some parts are happy, some parts are unhappy, sometimes happy, sometimes unhappy. Or the mind is clean, like the river could be clean or it could be very dirty, the water. So you watch, okay, the mind is clean or the mind is dirty or the mind is contaminated. But I am not the mind, I am the witness of the mind. The moment you are able to detach from the mind, then you are connecting with the self, the consciousness. So making a conscious effort to observe the mind, not only in meditation, but throughout the day, that should be a very powerful exercise.
So then use the laws of substitution.
Yes, substitution and observing, being a witness. We're not getting involved. Like the person standing on the banks of the river and watching the river flow, she can enjoy the flow of the river without getting overwhelmed by it. So watch the flow of the mind and let it be there.
What if someone is in your mind, listening, watching, and you're just releasing information, but they're not understanding the stream of stuff that needs to purge out?
You mean there's another person?
Yes.
Is it a real person or somebody within? Lots of people, you mean, network.
So then how do you use the laws of substitution to replace just a thought that needed to come out and get materialized and then without it hurting someone's feelings? Then how do you take responsibility for their feelings?
Well, I think that your first duty is to yourself. You have to protect your mind. Do not allow the mind to become negative and affected by negative people. Because if I'm not going to protect my mind, who will? So I have to protect my mind, make it loving, kind, and compassionate. And then the actions that come out will automatically be kind and compassionate. So probably they won't hurt somebody's feelings. If you are
discharging,
if you're doing the right thing with the right attitude, you know, generally your actions will be good. But if once in a while, if somebody is very negative and you have to dissociate with that person, it may become hurtful to that person, but you have to do it for your own peace of mind, yeah, for your own safety. I have to protect myself first. And if in the process, the another person, you may want to explain to that person. And if the person doesn't understand, so be it. You can't, you're only responsible for yourself. You cannot change the world. We cannot even change our spouse, even though we try. We cannot change our children. We try. We can't. We cannot change our neighbors. We cannot change our co-workers. We cannot change anybody. You can only change yourself. That's why they say change yourself and the world will change. If you try to change the world, it's a fruitless exercise. All you have to do is change myself and the world around me will change.
So